Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Ohio State University always is in the news, and today the Buckeye State's Big Ten University is at the heart of a couple top state stories. The first regards free speech on campuses. The second revolves around window art in OSU dorms. At the national level, there's the issue of deferred action for childhood arrivals, or DACA. That is, the children brought into the country illegally as children. President Trump is mulling a plan to sunset the program, possibly as early as this week. So what does that mean to OSU students who fall into that category, and what about everything else? And much more. Joining us now is President of Ohio State University, Dr. Michael Drake. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ann. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you. We were just talking before we went on the air. You had a busy summer. You mentioned, you do a lot of things in the summer that you can't get done in the rest of the school year because it is summer. This is not vacation things.
Yes. So all of us in higher education, particularly those of us who have been doing this for a while, are members of organizations. And because I'm a member of a couple of organizations of university presidents in particular. And so we're all in school during the year. And so our meetings together are generally scheduled during the summer. And but that means the summer is filled with meetings. We often start the week after classes finish. And
Is it a relief to be around other people that are in the same position you are at other institutions?
Well, yes, for several reasons, although relief isn't the word I use so much. So let me tell you why. So for one, these are unusual jobs. We have lots of responsibilities across a wide variety of areas. If you looked at my schedule during the day, it would go from medicine to sports to construction to finance to whatever, just boom, 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 all day, every day. And that's that way for my colleagues. I met yesterday with the IUC presidents, and we talked about a variety of
university
things. Yes, the 14 public universities in Ohio. And so we just have a variety of issues that come up for us. And so it's great to have a group of colleagues to talk about those things with, because generally on our campuses, we are the ones sort of at the end of the line who have to make the decisions. And so that's great to talk about other people who are doing that work. When I was in California, I was in a system where there were 10 campuses, and the 10 chancellors met together every month for a full day, and with our board about six times a year. So we had really dozens of full days together all year, which was very nice. We got really used to seeing each other and being supportive, learning things from friends and colleagues. So it's a good thing to do. The other part, so that's one. It's good to do because you get to share business sorts of things. You build friends that way. And so over the years, we have great friends who are doing similar work, and it's nice to have a time to see them. And that means a lot. But the other piece I was going to say is that there are things that we can do collectively as universities, thinking about the broader mission of educating the public and trying to elevate the quality of life and society, which is what is that kind of at the core of why we're here. And so if many of us get together, we can do things in groups or in teams that are greater than we could do individually. And that's so a lot of the work in the summer is with national organizations of university presidents working with the federal government or federal agencies to try to do things that improve the quality of life on our campuses. And that we did a lot of that this summer. So.
My guest is Ohio State University President Michael Drake. We'll be talking to him for the full hour, and coming up later, we'll be glad to take your questions. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Let's start now with the issue of deferred action for childhood arrivals, or DACA, as it's known. President Obama created the policy 5 years ago to defer action for individuals who can show that they meet certain guidelines. That is, the Department of Homeland Security will no longer deports certain undocumented youth who arrived in the United States as children. This could end. President Trump may sunset the policy as early as this week. We might even hear something today or tomorrow. How will Ohio State respond if that policy is sunsetted?
Well, this is the policy is relatively new. This is something you hear, the DACA policy per se is five-ish years ago is when it was discussed, and I think 2013 passed. The issue is one that's been with the country for a long time. And I certainly dealt with this again in California quite extensively, because we would have students on our campus who came with their families when they were 2 or 3 years old. Worked their way through grade school, high school, were outstanding students. Their families were routinely low-income families, and so they came from a low-income family, and because we have competitive or selective universities, they had to be at the top of their class in high school, and then they'd find themselves in college and be among the brightest, hardest-working students that we had. I mean, really outstanding people who'd overcome a lot and really are doing everything they can to contribute to the American dream. I mean, that's the reason for the term dreamers. And then they would find, and this was so strange, they'd find out sometimes once they were accepted to college, they would be applying for financial aid and find out that they weren't eligible. And for many of them, it was the first time they had any idea that this was a problem because they were—
Their parents hadn't told them.
They were 2 years old. So they were just working as hard as they could, and they'd say, oh, wait a minute, that you have this thing. And we always felt that the students that were in our universities in that circumstance were among the most successful people. They were really a reflection of the opportunity and success that we'd like. And so we did everything we could to be supportive of them within the law, which is where we are now. I know many of these students on campus who come
At Ohio State.
And we don't, they're not a lot. I'll tell you, the numbers are small. Numbers that we would be out of our, we have 60,000 students. This would be dozens of students, would be the numbers.
Does Ohio State know definitively how many?
So we don't know definitively, and it wouldn't be something we would look at actively.
Okay.
As we try to be supportive, the numbers that come up are not huge because, again, it's extraordinarily challenging to get admitted to our university anyway. These are really hardworking people who happen to be in that slice that they're in college now, so they're not a lot of people. But they're hardworking. Honestly, they're like you and me. You know, they're doing their very best to learn, to make themselves into productive members of society. And so we, as with all of our students, we do our best to support them. We think that it's going to college is a good thing, and going out in the world and being a productive member of society is a good thing, and we try to help that happen.
Does Ohio State have any particular policies regarding DACA students that reflects the policy that President Obama started 5 years ago?
What we were, and then again, this would be the truth, the case for many universities around the country, as we focused on these students, and over the years they've had different names, we were able to provide support for them in ways many of them wouldn't qualify for the kinds of support that other people in their financial circumstances would. They they can't get federal loans and things like that. So we try to be very thoughtful in helping them to get through college.
With other kinds of scholarships?
Where there are scholarships that aren't limited, we try and make sure they know about those things. And then we try and just help them help themselves to be successful.
If the United States ends its policy of not deporting those youth that fall into that category, universities like Ohio State may be asked to help the federal government track them down.
Yeah, wouldn't it be an amazing thing that we would have people, criminals, et cetera, all over the country, but someone would say, well, great, let's not look at them. Let's look at really enterprising young people who've worked really, really hard to try to better themselves and want to be contributing parts of our society and spend time and resources taking these successful people out of our society for no fault of their own. So I would hope that we wouldn't get to that point. I just think that that would be. And to be honest, you've heard many, many people, including the president, say that that would not be a good policy. So I don't know if there may be a change in policy that would make that the case. But my goodness, these would be the lowest possible priority of people. These are people who are successful by every measure and are trying to make themselves more successful, so we'd want to help them to be more successful. You know, I believe that universities are an uplifting, positive force in our society, in our country, one of the most important things. And if we want people to be able to have a university education and go out and help to uplift the quality of life for all of us. So,
let's turn to another topic, window art. There's some really beautiful new dorms on campus now, particularly along High Street and Lane Avenue, with big fancy windows, and it also looks nice and airy. And as someone who grew up in a system where it was cinder block and, small sliding windows in my room, I've envied those. But now the university bans students from using those Post-it notes or any kind of way to communicate something from their window. Why?
Yeah, we have, you know, each year we sort of have a series.
This is new this year.
New dorms, a series of policies we have in the code of conduct that we revise. And we and many other universities have rules about posting things in places. And so this rule was changed not in just as we. As the dorms came up and we saw, gee, this was something that we think will be more appropriate, we just made this rule change. It's a straightforward thing.
But what inspired the something this will be more appropriate rule change?
If anything, we hadn't had them. We would have done it before they were built had we, thought about this. So just seeing that the way the changes and the way the space was being used was something that we made a decision about.
You know, college students, their first response, or some of them have responded immediately with a really common refrain is, well, why don't they just tell us why?
Yeah.
They want to know why.
Yeah. I would say that there's the committees and all that meet about the things that determine what our variety of policies are on these things. And we and many other colleges have a policy that says that the windows are made to be windows and need to be used as such. And I could look more carefully into the discussions that took place, but it seemed like a reasonable thing to do.
What are the consequences if students ignore the ban? Because already there's some that hang flags up there. Might be, you know, the flag, you know, the state of Ohio flag or American flag or whatever.
Yeah. This is brand new, so I'd have to say we'd have to try to work through that. I don't expect it to be much of an issue.
Former Ohio State linebacker Chris Spielman is suing Ohio State on behalf of former and current Buckeye football players over a marketing program that he says uses athletes' images without permission and compensation. The program involves Honda-sponsored posters of Spielman and others that are displayed in Ohio Stadium. This doesn't have exactly to do with compensation, but it does get to the issue of ownership of one's likeness. I know it's a lawsuit that's pending against the state, and you probably are not necessarily going to comment, but this is an ongoing issue. I mean, we're doing another program about the whole issue of compensation of big-time college sports tomorrow.
Yes. Yes.
What are your feelings about the larger issue of compensation for big-time college athletes or any athletes?
Compensation for professional athletes, I think, is entirely appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I have a family member who is a professional athlete, and that's his job. So I always believed in that. I, for years, was on the NC2A board, and we've maybe even talked about that in the past. And we worked really carefully at doing what we could to be supportive of student athletes. But I believe that I support amateur athletics for college and professional athletics for professional athletics. And I think it's great to have both. And we have a system that has both now. And so we try to keep those separately. That's been my view for years. And the issues are the litigated issues are complicated litigated issues that take years and, you know, Supreme Court level sort of complications. So we all follow and participate in those things actively. But I believe in being supportive of student athletes. And I actually was on a small committee that modified the ways that we can support our student athletes that I think make things much better than they were even 4 or 5 years ago, much better.
When
I think that's good.
A company like Honda sponsors posters like that. There are other examples of those kinds of things. Where does the money go? Does it go to the Department of Athletics?
Oh, so our broad sponsorship licensing programs have for a variety of things that use the Ohio State University, those things go to the university broadly. Much of it comes through the Department of Athletics, but then the Department of Athletics supports the campus broadly to the tune of millions of dollars a year. So it all comes to the university ultimately. So it's...
Okay.
Right? Is there a better...
No.
Okay.
My guest is Dr. Michael Drake. He's president of the Ohio State University. He's with me for the hour. If you have a question or comment, questions mostly for Dr. Drake, we welcome them. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. I'm talking with Ohio State University President Michael Drake today. He is starting his fourth year at the helm.
I'm a senior now, so good thing.
He's a fourth-year president, and there's lots to talk about. There has been since the day you stepped foot on campus to start your tenure here.
Yes.
And nothing's changed. If you have a question for Dr. Drake, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. The OSU chapter of Young Americans for Freedom and Students for Life were on hand for an announcement yesterday about plans to introduce a bill in the Ohio General Assembly that would prohibit universities from taking action that chills free speech or free expression, from limiting speech to areas known as free speech zones and from canceling speakers based on potential protests. In general, what's your reaction to a state law like that?
So you mentioned this is my fourth year here, but I also was 9 years at another campus before, so it's year number 13. And more than most people, it's turned out I've had First Amendment issues that we dealt with. My first campus, when I arrived there, we had a federal lawsuit that lasted for years, and so I had extraordinarily intense training trial by fire there. And then we had very, very intense internationally. We made international news on multiple occasions with items of protected speech, and also teach a course still in the Supreme Court Civil Rights and Music, which I've talked to you about. Mm-hmm. But for that course, my co-teacher has always been the dean of our law school. And so our current dean, Alan Michaels, is a expert in these things, and the dean I taught with in California was many times the most significant or prominent constitutional law professor in the country, the most quoted constitutional law professor in the country. So I've had hundreds of hours of discussions about the Constitution, and many of them focused on the First Amendment. And I think the First Amendment is a very important part of who we are as a country, and I work really, really hard to practice it, and So I believe in it. Do I think that we generally then, as we try to layer other nuances on top of something that served us well for 240 years almost, I don't know that they tend to improve it. I think that the First Amendment is quite clear, few words only, but very, very clear. We do our very best to uphold that.
So you're saying that additional legislation at the state level is not necessary?
I would say that the First Amendment has worked well with us for, I don't want to get into the different politics of things, but it's been 230 years or so that's worked quite well, and it's very explicit.
One of the sponsors
doesn't,
of the,
let me say, doesn't allow us to chill speech. I mean, that's, we in fact have to protect it. It began as a restriction against chilling, but over the centuries, it's really evolved into have to be a platform, and we believe in that.
One of the sponsors of the proposed legislation says that conservative organizations in particular feel that their speech is being suppressed. Have you heard complaints from what might be considered conservative organizations? I guess the Young Americans for Freedom and Students for Life would be examples of that.
We hear this particular refrain has come up, and I mean, we've all seen it in newspapers, et cetera. We, on campus during a given year, at one time thought about the number of speakers we would have on a campus, and this is, again, I did this years ago, but it's tens of thousands of speakers. We have lectures all the time. We have guests every day from all over the world every day speaking on any number of topics, and we support that in a content-neutral way.
I think it was Ann Coulter was canceled or event that she was going to speak at was canceled at Berkeley. Correct me if I'm wrong on that. A few months ago, that raised the hackles of a lot of people at the time, and they said at the university that they've canceled the speech by Coulter, who's a conservative media pundit, because they were worried about violence on campus. Is that something that university presidents should be able to resort to as a reason for stopping somebody from speaking on campus, the possibility of violence?
I noticed they use the term resort to. So let's say that our policies are content neutral. The law is clear about that. They're content neutral. And there's the term that people use popularly always is free speech. I prefer the term protected speech.
Okay.
I mean, I think that's that legally that works better. And so almost all speech is protected, but not all actions are protected. And we have a responsibility at the same time to have a safe environment. So we always have, if we believe there's a there are credible threats of violence in one way or another, we have an obligation to protect the health and safety of our population. And so those are the things that we balance, again, on a daily basis. I mean, all the things we do are consistent with that. And let me just say again, on a campus like ours, or any other one you mentioned, there are tens of thousands of speeches, really almost an infinite number, tens of thousands of speeches and tens of thousands of reflections of people's opinions that happen all day, every day. It's not an issue. We've worked well with that.
If neo-Nazis, white nationalists want to stage a protest on the OSU campus, what do you say to that, given the past recent past history?
Well, so there, you know, in prior campus, we had very conservative, aggressive groups, Minutemen and others, who would have protests. We in fact, used the term protest also, and I'll just use, I use the word demonstration.
Yeah.
And so we don't want to make it.
Right. It is a pejorative. You're right. So just, they want to demonstrate. Right.
So those things are all, we plan those and support those in a content neutral fashion. If we think of content neutral, protected speech, then that policy actually helps us make our decisions routinely. And again, as we speak, there are people talking from every point of view that you can imagine right now on the campus, and that's the case all day, every day. From time to time, there are things that seem or appear or become more newsworthy, but this is a circumstance where people are exchanging ideas from across the spectrum routinely all day, every day.
Campus free speech bills, the likes of which were talked about yesterday, are something of a trend right now. Have you watched how your colleagues in different states have responded? Anything edifying there?
Well, again, these are all each bit of legislation is its own specific bit of legislation, mm-hmm. and I notice these things as they come up, but I don't actually know any details about
other states.
Yeah, these all evolve over time from when they're initially put forward. I honestly, it's worked for 230 years. You know, I revert back to the First Amendment, and we do our best to have content neutral discussions of issues or demonstrations as people wish.
The same proposed legislation would also make activity fees optional. What are your thoughts about that?
This has also been something that comes up from time to time from mm-hmm. different points of view. When I was in college, there were people who didn't want to pay activities fees because they were supporting different things that they didn't like. There have been citizens who have said, gee, I don't want to pay the portion of my income taxes that goes to something the government does that I don't like. In general, these fees go to collections of people that distribute the funding in ways that are supportive of the overall quality of life for everyone. And that would be the place that I think is a better place to be, rather than each of us saying, gosh, here are the things that the government's doing, so I'm going to pay my taxes for this fraction, but not for that fraction. That would just make it hard to manage the society. So generally, students vote for activities fees. The student body votes, and then the students meet together. We have a large council. They meet together and decide how they're going to distribute those fees, and many people participate. I've been at the meetings. It's quite democratic and meaning like a democracy. And I think it's worked really well. It actually gives the students a chance to practice leadership as well.
Let's hear from David in Columbus. David, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi. I'm glad to see the president there.
Hi, David.
I think the Ohio State does a great job. You have a lot of speakers, like you said. There's a lot of opportunity to go in and listen to opinions from a variety of experts. The one problem I have is that not everybody gets a chance now to have a college education, and I think that would be a way of expanding I don't know how you describe it, just expanding the experience of people. It's just kind of confined to, I don't like to say the rich, but it is becoming so hard to get to pay for these educations. That
yes,
education is important. So just like you say, I think that the opportunity to be educated, and I don't think everybody takes advantage of coming in and listening to the speakers at the university. That's kind of a free education, but
yes. So David, several things. I appreciate the question and the comments, and that we do try to provide. You know, our business is the business of knowledge, and that's broad and infinite. And so I appreciate that. I would say a couple of things. We focus really heavily on affordability. You have these three cornerstones: affordability, access, and excellence. So we always want to be as good as we can be. That's great. But affordability and access are really important to us, and we are very focused on doing what we can to make our educational enterprise as broadly accessible to people and as we can. And so what we first, we do have 65,000 students, so we have a lot, and we have students here in Columbus as well as students on our regional campuses. We also have more and more classes and other content that's available online. Much of that is available freely, so we have podcasts and webcasts and other things that allow people to access for essentially free information from our lecturers. Those things are important. This year, we're really happy. We have a program of affordability grants that are focused on students from families in the lower two-thirds or so of the income distribution, particularly lower half of the income distribution. And I was really happy we had $15 million in those grants 2 years ago, then $20 million last year, and then this year $25 million of need-based aid that we put out to help students be able to afford a college education, students and their families. And so we work very hard to try to make an excellent education affordable. And as I said, in the cyber world, more and more of our content is available even at a distance here in Ohio and really around the world, the people who can log on. And so we'd like to do what we can to get information out, and we continue to work in those directions. And really, that they're very important things for us to do, and I appreciate your comments.
Thank you, David. Bob in Columbus, you're on the air with Ohio State President Michael Drake. Hi, David. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Bob, yes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my comment is I'm seeing fewer and fewer black students enrolled at Ohio State. I don't blame the university for that. Part of the problem I see is that the Columbus school system is deliberately doing things to stifle the education of black children. Do you have any thoughts on that? And if, for example, not allowing black children to bring home the books so parents can help them.
You mean lower income kids ultimately, right?
Well, I have a couple.
Go on.
Let me say, I hear the questions. I'm not as, I don't know as much about the Columbus school policies as you or maybe others do. So I'll leave that. I will say this about our student body. You know, we had nearly 53,000 students apply to our first year class that started last week, and so the far and away the most in our history. So we have we're very, very popular, and we're pleased to see so many students applying. I will say that our graduation rates this year are at an all-time high. Our persistence rate, that's the number of students who started their first year and came on to their second year, that's about 94-95%. So it's really, we're at all-time highs in numbers of students applying, graduation rates, persistence rates, the qualifications of our students. We're really excited about the quality and the value of an Ohio State education. At the same time, I mentioned that we have affordability, access, and excellence, and it's not one of those. It's really all three of those together all the time. So the excellence is really bringing more and more people to apply to us, and that's great. The affordability is, as I mentioned, with our need-based aid programs that have increased so significantly. And by the way, I'll say we've increased need-based aid by savings in administrative costs. So we've worked to decrease our costs and then take that money and turn it directly back to our students.
I wanted to get at something Bob said, though, about minority enrollment. He says it looks like...
Has it gone down? There was a preamble. So I was going to say, that with all of that, this year we have an 11% increase in year-over-year in our underrepresented minority enrollment this year. So actually, that was the point I was making, is that we're at historic highs in quality. We're at put millions and millions of dollars into need-based aid ourselves with our own savings from administrative costs this year. We've really focused on that. And what we're seeing, and we saw it this year, was an 11% increase in our underrepresented minority enrollees. And that's part of the access. So not where we need to be, but we're making progress in all these things simultaneously. And I really do appreciate Bob's question.
Yeah. Thank you, Bob, for that call. An email from Alyssa. She says the University of Michigan is going to provide in-state students whose family makes less than $65,000 a year and are accepted. They're going to provide their education for free. Does OSU have a similar plan in the works?
So great question. Appreciate that. And I was I mentioned I was in D.C. this summer a bit, and one of the people I was visiting there is a colleague from the school up north who we worked together. And actually, we worked together on programs similar to this. And so we have, as I again just said, we this year put $25 million into need-based aid, more than would have been the case 2 years ago. And we also actually put another $7 million into a different type of need-based aid. So it's more like $32 million this year in need-based aid to try to bridge or to narrow that gap. And we want to continue to move forward. And I applaud the program that's the case up north. And I think a similar program would be good for us. It takes a while. It said free education. It's actually, it meets the cost of tuition. So it's not.
And there's a lot more to education than tuition.
Room and board and things. But at least meeting tuition is something that we continue to narrow the gap. And the gap is much smaller than it was, as I said, millions of dollars smaller than it was, and we want to continue in that direction. It's a very, very good thing to do, and he and I work on programs together, actually, to help support each other. I think that's a good thing.
All right. Thanks for that email, Melissa. We will continue our conversation with OSU President Michael Drake when we return. If you have a question, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guest this hour is Ohio State University President Michael Drake. We have a lot to get to, but I'm going to go backwards just for a minute and take a few calls on some topics we've already covered, including DACA students, that is the Dreamers, and Luis and Columbus are on the air. Hi, Luis.
Yes, good morning. I have a question for Dr. Drake. I wanted him to elaborate on his statement that OSU had provided venues and support for DACA students. I feel this was perhaps a misleading statement, since I have done work with DACA students for some years now, and I happen to know that students have to find their own avenues to finance their education because they are excluded from so many institutional forms of support. So, okay. Dr. Drake, could you elaborate a little bit more on the things that DACA students would be eligible to rely on currently, as well as if there's a statement to come from President Trump in the future, what will Ohio State be able to support DACA students with financially?
Oops, sorry, Lewis. I didn't mean to cut you off, but okay, Dr. Drake.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I appreciate your comments, and I couldn't say as much about what has happened in the past. I wouldn't be as knowledgeable. I will say that I meet with a variety of groups of students over the year, and this last year, on maybe three occasions, I'll have to think about that, I met with DACA students, and we actually appointed, we have one of our full-time employees in the Office of Student Life who focuses on this particular subpopulation of our students to make sure that they can be in touch with the support services that are available. We are actively and have been doing this for some time, looking at ways that we can help to facilitate the support of this group of students, and we will continue to do that. We haven't heard, there's speculation about an announcement that may come from Washington. We'd have to see what that announcement was before we knew what liberty we had to respond in the way we could. But as I've met with the students and as I've met with our staff people that support these students, and again, a new appointed staff person with this specific set of responsibilities. We did this last spring. We are continuing to look at all the ways that we can be supportive of these students, to because I appreciate the challenging pathway they've had and the real stars that so many of them are, and we want to do what we can to enhance their future.
And just to clarify, regardless of their economic, of their income, of their ability to pay, they don't qualify for federally subsidized student loans. They don't qualify for any kind of federal grants. Anything like that.
Yes, there are a variety of things that they, many of those they don't follow. And for some state programs, they don't qualify.
Right.
And so they have to be, and the policies are done actually on purpose, and it makes things challenging for them. And so what we try to do is, within those things that are allowed by law, what we're allowed to do is to make sure they know what is those services that aren't available, and to provide as much support as we can to try to help them really have the same chance as any of our other students to be successful.
Thank you, Lewis, for the call. Turning to Tyler now in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, Tyler.
Hello. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
I'm calling with, I guess, sort of a hybrid comment and question. Turning back to the First Amendment issue and the legislation proposed in the Ohio House, I appreciate and commend your guest for his commitment to free speech, as he stated it. But the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, otherwise known as FIRE,
as protected speech. But go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
Their whole mission is looking at free speech and freedom of expression on college campuses, and Ohio State is actually rated as a yellow light university, meaning that they have some policies that are a little bit overbroad, can encourage some administrative abuse. My question is, I also think that the First Amendment has done a great job for the past 200 plus years. I just wonder, is there a problem with doing something to bolster that? We've seen across the country universities pushing the boundary, seeing how far they can go. My own alma mater, University of Cincinnati, was sued several years ago and lost that court case about their free speech zone. So I'm just curious, is there anything wrong with not trying to subvert the First Amendment, but just strengthen it and add some protection?
Thank you, Tyler.
Yeah, so great. I appreciate the questions. And I'll just share my experience on it, and that is that my own personal experiences, I've been sued from both sides over years and multiple times, and so we must have been doing something right, I guess, but we've always been supported, and our policies we've always had an effective interpretation of what the law is, and I believe that straightforward solutions that are simple and repeatable and have lasted through the centuries are good things to rely on. And so we try to follow the letter and the spirit of the law, and we are routinely involved in circumstances where people have widely divergent views, and our job is to try to balance those in our university. And I'll say that these things... I will repeat something I said earlier. These discussions happen all day, every day, countless thousands and thousands of times on our campuses. And the cases that one sees in the media tend to be specific, narrow things. And that overwhelmingly our campuses are places where people express their opinions and come to us for that, and we appreciate that. So as I said, if I'm not I'm not above the concept that things can be improved, but when we have things that have worked really well for centuries, and it takes a lot for me to decide that we should tinker around with something as fundamental as the First Amendment. Just my own, that's I guess more of a personal view, that tinkering with something that's been with us and worked well since the 18th century is something I would do cautiously.
All right. Thank you for that call. We have an email from Jean. She says, I understand that there's a new home ownership incentive for OSU employees to purchase a home in the campus area, staff and faculty. Can President Drake discuss how much the incentive is, who it applies to, the time period is in effect, what area it covers, how to get more info? I don't know if we can cover all of those areas right now, but in general, what's the philosophy behind this incentive?
Yeah, so I can give you in general the philosophy behind the incentive, but details are left to my talented and knowledgeable staff. So the what I'd say is in general we have a we had a subsidy that was people buying homes in the area near the university. And I believe this was, well, I don't even say where it was because I might, my memory might be a little bit askew, but there was a certain dollar amount, and that worked well. But we found that the home prices had gone up a little bit much, and the dollar amount was a bit of a limitation. So the dollar amount is being increased. So it's a certain percentage up to a certain dollar amount, which effectively doubles the amount of incentive that families would have to be able to help them with moving into homes in the in the area that's surrounding the university. And, you know, let me say that just calling the university or calling my office and asking how to get specific information would be better than me trying to remember the details of which blocks are included.
Yeah, we'll try to find a link to that information and post it on our website at wosu.org/allsides.
Yes, but it has been. But there is an improvement. I think it effectively doubles or a little bit more than doubles the amount of money that's available for certain families in certain circumstances, and we think it's a good thing.
You broke ground on August 19th for a $20 million executive airport terminal at the OSU airport at Don Scott Field. Why?
Well, we have a really a couple of things. One, we have a very high-quality training program for people interested in aeronautics, pilots. We have our engineering, our College of Engineering works very actively there. There's, interestingly, a pilot shortage looming and getting worse as time goes on. And so the age-old way, you know, those of us who spend time on airplanes, routinely pilots would have been in the would be men who'd been in the military and then in their post-military life, they'd fly airlines. That supply is not keeping up with the number of pilots that are necessary. Actually, more and more flights these days and more pilots needed. So a really high-quality training program is something that's really important. And we have the luxury of having an airport. And then we had a very generous donor support of the program, which helped to really mitigate the cost actively.
So. What's an executive airport terminal? I mean, what does that even mean? Is this for private planes and private jets? I don't get it.
Yeah, so it's this is Don Scott, and so this is, I guess, executive airport, meaning it's not the main commercial airport, but it's commercial, private. A variety of planes can use this and have over the years. And as time goes on, there may be other uses that develop. So it works like a regular airport. It's just not a lot of public passenger transport.
Yeah, the highlight of the 2018 budget that was approved last week by the OSU Board of Trustees was that Ohio State is a $7 billion institution, and that is in terms of revenue, and most of which is driven by growth in the Wexner Medical Center. That was put forth as a highlight. Is OSU a hospital or a university?
The OSU is a university. It says,
okay.
In fact, it's
it
Ohio
says it
State.
In the name, right?
Yeah, U is university.
Yes.
Yes. You know, we have a wonderful university, and I mentioned earlier that we are at historic highs in so many things that we are, care about, and we are pleased about that. I mentioned the success of our students. I would also want to mention the success of our faculty. Our research was up dramatically this year. The faculty who were elected to national and international societies up this year, so wonderful success there. A little more than half of our enterprise measured on a budget basis is in our academic medical center. So we have seven hospitals, quite a large enterprise. We see thousands and thousands of patients every day, and are really pleased. In fact, our hospital was once again rated as one of the safest and most effective in the country. Our patient satisfaction is at an all-time high and increasing. Our patient outcomes are doing better than ever, so we're really pleased about that. And we're serving more people than ever and bringing new beds on actually as we speak. So, So things are working really, really well on the academic health center side of things. We want to continue to improve them, because the better the academic health center works, the better the health of the people in our community, the better the health in our state. So it's a really important thing, and we all work together.
The deadline for interested faculty to submit ideas to participate in the Affordable Learning Exchange is coming up, in September. This is for faculty who want to transform their courses using open and affordable materials. And it's the goal is to save students $10 million by 2020. This is in support of your 2020 vision.
Yes.
How big of a deal is that? It sounds sort of like nickel and diming in a way, but at the individual level, at the individual level, it probably helps students a lot. But is that what it's supposed to do, is help save students money?
Yes. I mean, ultimately, it'd be millions of nickels and dimes, literally. And that it really does help. So we mentioned earlier, one of our callers, I think Bob was speaking about how expensive, maybe it was Dave, I think, that mentioned how expensive college is. And tuition is one part of it. About a third is tuition. Room, board, supplies are about two-thirds. So it is expensive to go to college, always has been. Mm-hmm. And so we want to, in our affordability, access, and excellence, make sure that we're affordable and we can provide broad access. And that means we have to do what we can to control our costs as we increase the quality of our products. So there's ways that we are working actively and continuing to expand ways to work actively to provide material to students that is more cost-effective for them and more cost-effective and more effective for them. And this is one of those programs. And we believe we can actually save millions of dollars a year for our students. Millions of dollars a year, ultimately, for our students trying to make our products more effective. And there are millions of dollars a year available to be saved here.
The OSU Board of Trustees last week endorsed a new strategic vision for the future of the university. That's from a press release from Ohio State.
Yes.
What's, if you can just tell us about one big new thing about the vision, because when I read over it, it all sounded like, I don't mean to make this be critical or pejorative at all, but it was a nice strategic vision, but it didn't seem new.
You know, we're on the radio, so it'd be nice if we were on TV and people could see your face, you know, and I appreciate you're looking at me.
We are on television, too.
Okay, so let me say that it's a really, 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 really bold strategic vision, I promise, because there are things, if you look at the whole thing together, no one's ever attempted this before. And no one's ever been able to do it before. And that there's several things that are really important parts of this. So one is, and we start with, and something we talked about today, and this is more alphabetical than anything else, but one of the big provisions is that we are looking to do everything we can to provide more affordable access to quality higher education. And so it is having us continue on the program that we really started a couple of years ago to direct our need-based aid toward talented middle and low-income students who have all of the drive, all the intelligence, all the focus to be able to achieve higher education at one of the outstanding higher education institutions in the world, but find the financial barriers to be a real deterrent, or are leaving with too much debt. So we have programs to really reduce the debt of our students, and again, by millions of dollars a year, to try to get that debt load down by making us affordable, and there are programs to do that. As we do that, we want to make sure we're using the most modern teaching methods, and we'd like to be a leader in large public universities in using the most modern teaching methods to help make sure that the learning outcomes of our students are maximized. There's a big focus there. I won't go into the detail on specific research programs that we're focusing on, but these are things that will make a real difference to the lives and health of the people in Central Ohio and beyond.
Can we put a link on our website? Okay, there's one more, and we've got about 30 seconds.
And then I also want to say operational excellence really quickly, which is that to fund all these things, we have to be able to save money. We already are saving about $30 million a year in what were formerly administrative costs, that where we the money that we give back to our students for need-based aid comes from those savings on a daily basis. And so we want to expand that program as well. So we're really tying all these together to make us a more affordable, more excellent, and more accessible university.
You're a very busy guy. Thank you for squeezing us in. Once again, Ohio State University President Michael Drake, appreciate your time.
Great to be here. I felt we were just getting started.
I know.
Okay,
I know.
We'll do it again.
Thanks to everybody else for listening. Thanks for your questions. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.